This week on Hyperspace Broadcasts, witness a cat reverse Florence Nightingale, a human man. Yeah, this is a weird one. Hey, everyone. Welcome once again to Hyperspace Broadcast, a show where two real friends dig through Toonami's back catalog and try to determine what, if anything, is worth revisiting. I'm Michael Doak.
I'm Peter Eby.
And this week we're covering Sailor Moon S, Hearts in Ice, or Sailor Moon S, the movie, I guess depending on your region. So this is a movie that was released in Japan in 1994 and aired on Toonami in 2001. The dub was produced by Pioneer, though they were able to get most of the voice actors from the Deke version of Sailor Moon, so it's a lot of the, like, Sailor Moon, Sailor Moon R voices, which is kind of nice.
Yeah.
And unlike Sailor Moon R, the movie, this was actually based on a side story manga written by Naoko Takeuchi, who's the creator of Sailor Moon as a whole. Apparently, she was not super satisfied with leaving Sailor Moon R, the movie, to outside people. So basically, she wrote this side story with the intention of making it into a movie. And since it was released around the same time that Sailor Moon S was airing, it ended up being Sailor Moon S, the movie. And oh boy, what a movie this is.
it's a movie that takes kind of like the mistakes of all of some of the worst Sailor Moon episodes and just runs with it. Like, oh, remember those episodes of Sailor Moon where they had a villain who screeched? Oh yeah.
Let's have a bunch of those. Oh, you remember those episodes?
That, yeah.
You remember those episodes of Sailor Moon where everyone shits all over Serena for existing? Well, that's literally all the humor in this one.
Episodes of Sailor Moon where there's like kind of a fucked up relationship going on, but it's treated as normal?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
It's yeah, in here okay. Too. So we should probably actually talk about what this movie's about. Like all Sailor Moon movies that we've seen so far, in other words, both of them, out in space, there's a celestial object headed towards Earth, in this case, a comet, and it's inhabited by an evil princess named Princess Snow Kaguya. A piece of her comet is broken off and she is trying to find it. And meanwhile, on Earth, an astronomer named Kakuru sees the comet, and apparently he has recovered the missing piece, which is very crystalline because it's Sailor Moon. What do you expect? While this is happening, we get a nice little opening montage of Serena and the gang just kind of hanging out, going shopping. We've got a bunch of great, I mean, really the highlight of this whole sequence is the, like,
there's a changing room montage, of
yeah,
course.
right Sailor Venus going in and coming out with various clothes, including a t-shirt with the best slogan ever, "Love Never Changer," which is I want that shirt so bad. Like,
yeah, it's like a sweater too. that'd be a great little Christmas sweater to get. It should be noted too, at least in the beginning of the movie, I think it kind of changes later on, but in the beginning of the movie, the scientist looks way too much like Sailor Uranus.
Yeah, it's really the hair. His hair, like Kakuru's yeah. haircut is pretty much identical to Uranus's, and fortunately she barely shows up in this movie. Like, Sailor Uranus's presence in this movie is like any name actor in a low budget sci-fi movie where they were, you know, they were on set for like a day and they shot all their scenes out and then they left and were paid scale. Like, all of the outer senshi are barely here, and it's kind of hilarious how non-essential they are to everything.
They were here for a day. We need an outer senshi cameo, guys. Yeah, all right, fine.
Like, we need to have them in here. They have to be here because otherwise everyone will be like, where are they? So we'll just get them in. We'll pay them at scale and then they can leave. So yeah, everyone's hanging out, and Luna feels sick, so she decides to leave on her own, despite Artemis saying that he can walk her home. You know, who knows how far this is, and she is a cat, but whatever. She while walking home, collapses on the street, and a dude in a cool car speeds towards her. But fortunately, she is saved. Who saves her? Kakeru, of course.
Yeah, and Kakeru throws himself in front of a car and grabs a cat and does like a tactical shoulder roll at the same time. You know, like he does like a dive. And
yeah, it's pretty intense.
Wild, like last minute save.
Yeah, so he nurses Luna back to health, and this is where this movie starts becoming weird, because as she is being nursed back to health, it's that classic cliche, she falls in love with him. And yes, this is a cat with the voice of like a fairy godmother falling in love with a human that looks a lot like Sailor Uranus, who I believe is 16. So yeah, there's a whole lot of weird stuff going on here.
He has a PhD.
This is true. We learn later that he has a PhD, and he confides in Luna that he believes that there was once a princess on the moon, but everyone thinks he's crazy, including his girlfriend, who is an astronaut named Himiko. Dun, dun, dun. Yes, this is a love triangle between a cat and two human beings.
One of which is a fucking astronaut.
Right. So Princess Snow Kaguya sends down some snow dancers to Earth in order to search for her lost crystal. They start freezing the Earth, like causing all sorts of snowstorms and stuff. And
this is where the movie gets real rough.
Yes, these characters screech constantly, and it is like nails on a chalkboard for minutes at a time, particularly like, when they're fighting the scouts.
It's like Alpha from Power Rangers turned up to 11, you know, it's like, aye!
Yeah. It's
the worst.
It is the most high-pitched screeching, and it, I think, is like, it's one of those things to me that I'm like, you know, I can see this working in manga. Like, okay, these are basically like banshees. They just kind of screech, and they don't really talk or anything. But translated into film or animation, I guess, it is so infuriating to just hear this constantly through these fight scenes. It's ridiculous. The Sailor Scouts fight these snow dancers, screeching ensues, and apparently Kakeru is in possession of the crystal that Snow Kaguya is looking for, and somehow it's like developed some power over him, and it's making him sick. And also, he's in love with the snow princess, who I believe he thinks is the princess who he believes was once on the moon.
He at one point straight up breaks up with his girlfriend, who is coming back to visit him, I think from Cape Canaveral, for a week. And he's just they get in an argument because he's like, I just can't believe you don't believe in the moon princess. And it's like, oh my God, this guy's a fucking dipshit.
Well, here's the part that like, this becomes truly ridiculous, because yes, they get into this bizarre argument over how she doesn't believe him about there being this moon princess. And it, I don't know, it's just a really weird argument, but mainly this is also the point where we learn that he has multiple PhDs, because she, in a completely artless, dump of information, just calls him a scientist like 15 times in the space of one sentence about how she can't believe an educated man of science can believe something so unscientific. He has multiple PhDs in different fields
of
science.
Physics, biology, medicine, like, space engineering. You even have a PhD. And it's like, shut up.
It's just so hilarious, so how much information they cram into this one stupid argument. And also, and this is one of those things where I'm like, I don't know if it's the dub or what, but this guy goes from like, huh, you
he
don't believe
zero
me
to 100
to like, get out of here, you don't believe me, what's wrong with you, in zero time at
it's
all.
Amazing.
It's ridiculous.
It is as if like he wrote himself into the story. Like, okay, I gotta write how everyone tells me I'm amazingly intelligent in extensive detail.
Yeah, he's a fan fiction self-insert character a little bit, but incidentally not written by a guy.
Yeah, right.
And I assume he's not really supposed to be like the good guy in this. But anyway, so this is all happening while Luna is observing it. And she is kind of mixed feelings about this because on one hand, she's in love with this guy. But on the other hand, she sees that he is, in fact, in love with his current girlfriend, Himiko. And she posits this idea where if she could become a human, she could pretend to be the Snow Princess. Yeah. And like,
it's like such a useless complication to the plot, too. It's like, wait.
Well, but wait. Because because she wants to pretend to be the Snow Princess to convince him, like, to break the spell over him so that he can be with Himiko. And this just feels like some serious ulterior motive shit from Luna, frankly.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I could pretend to be this thing that he's already in love with, and that might help everyone, I think.
She comes to this conclusion.
I'm just throwing out ideas.
She comes to this conclusion where she, as a cat, kisses him on the lips when he's asleep, which is pretty creepy.
Yeah, it's very strange. It's some serious...
you get away with it in a kid's movie thing. Don't think about it. And then you think about it and you're like, oh, no, that's gross.
it's just bizarre. Yeah. So this is all happening. And finally, Princess Snow Kaguya manages to get the crystal back. And with its power, becomes pretty much unstoppable and freezes the entire Earth. Now, this is one of my favorite scenes in the movie. I guess we kind of skipped over the point where Tuxedo Mask comes in because he's in this movie for all of 2 seconds, much like the Outer Sailor Scouts. He seems to be here on contract.
Incognito as Santa. He flies in on a sleigh, basically, on this blimp sleigh, and he goes, Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and he takes off the outfit.
Yeah, he's literally dressed as Santa sitting in a sleigh, and it takes a while before it's revealed to actually be Tuxedo Mask.
And he gives probably the most half-ass fucking Tuxedo Mask speech we've ever heard, and it's really good. Winter for us is a long, difficult season, but that's okay, we expect it. Your evil permanent winter, however, is wrong! That's it. that's his fucking... That's his fucking bit, and he caps it off by throwing a top at one of the a spinning top at one of the snow dancers. Like, okay, like you really need to punctuate that with this weird weapon you've never been seen using. I wonder if that weapon's like a manga deep cut or some shit. like some fans at home are like, "Duh, they got the top."
Yeah, right.
It's, hit it with the dreidel. Maybe it's a holiday theme thing.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Probably not. But it didn't look like a dreidel.
No, not really. I barely remember this scene, so I don't have much to say about it, except that this, I would say this is only rivaled by my personal favorite Tuxedo Mask speech, which is when he's talking about candy in one episode, and it's a similar, like, candy's good except your candy, which is evil, and that is... I think only edges this one out because immediately after he says that, it cuts to Sailor Moon saying something along the lines of, what is he talking about?
Yeah, right.
It's like directly lampshaded how nonsense what he's saying is, which doesn't happen here, unfortunately. So that's a great scene. But my favorite line of dialogue in this whole movie is from a background TV weather report. Where
it's a good sign.
This is in the midst of the whole world being frozen, and this TV weatherman is just very nonchalantly going through the weather. It's like, well, the equatorial regions of Earth have completely frozen over. There will be freezing rain and snow overnight. And then that's it. Like,
yeah.
Delivered in that tone, basically, of just, I guess this is normal. Don't worry about it, everyone, even though it's clearly catastrophic. I don't know. It's like someone like calmly announcing like a nuclear attack on the United States.
Yeah.
Like, I can't even imagine how that would happen.
So we have the next couple days, a forecast of nuclear flurries, of the snow, the ash from the winter. So, you know, just stay inside and hope for the best.
Stay inside, duct tape your windows shut, and hope for the best. And now to Chet with baseball tips. I don't know. It's very bizarre.
Well, baseball's not a thing anymore because of the nuke, but, you know, video games exist.
Hey, it just happened. There's still baseball. So, yes, all of this crap is happening. The world's freezing over. Himiko launches on a space mission in the middle of all of this, and Kakeru, ill and worried about her, just kind of wanders out into a blizzard and collapses in the street, where he's found by Luna. Real role reversal, now that I think about it.
Yeah.
So Sailor Moon and everyone else are trying to fight Princess Snow Kaguya. Nothing is working. They try all their special moves. We get glorious stock footage of all of their attacks. And finally, after a long discussion about love or something, Sailor Moon opens up the silver crystal, this has the power to destroy Snow Kaguya.
And Sailor Moon's speech is a complete fucking non sequitur. Kaguya's just like, I'm gonna freeze over the planet and destroy you, ha ha ha. And Sailor Moon's like, well, you know what, I gotta talk about love for a second. It's like, dude, that was never a thing. Like, I imagine Kaguya just being like, what does this have to do with anything? Like,
yeah, right.
She never had a love theme to herself. She's a rather undeveloped villain. Like, it's just...
Yeah, there's not a whole lot to Kaguya, but...
The only love theme comes, like, indirect from the whole Kakeru bullshit.
Yeah, right. So, this long speech about love is made. Sailor Moon opens the silver crystal, and everyone kind of joins together for some kind of combo attack that honestly looks pretty cool, actually.
Like, yeah, sure.
They all get in a circle, and it's just the night. Like, I don't know. I'm a sucker for the effects where, like, parts of characters are backlit.
Yeah, it was cool.
In this case, all of their, like, ribbons and color-coded shit are backlit, and it looks kind of cool. So this defeats Kaguya, and part of this move, apparently, is that Sailor Moon can wish for anything, yeah. And she wishes that Luna could be a human for one night. So Luna turns into a human and sort of carries Kakeru through space and is basically just convinces him that he should try to patch things up with Himiko.
By, you know, proving that he's right, I guess, which I'm sure is going to be a great way to patch up his relationship. Hey, you know what? I was right, though. Like, I know I was being a complete asshole about this bullshit, but of course she saw it, too. She saw a flash of light in space. God.
Of course she concludes, oh, I guess there is a moon princess, yeah. Because I saw this flash of light, and that's the only conclusion.
And cool on Sailor Moon's part to be like, you know what, I'm gonna throw a little something to my main cat, Luna. You get one day.
Yeah.
Like, why not give her the ability to transform at will?
I don't know. Maybe that's outside the terms of the agreement.
Yeah,
like, she looked
right
at the contract, and in the fine print, it's like, one night only.
Yeah, yeah. You can grant a one night only wish.
Right. So, yes, Luna in human form kisses Kakeru, and then we get the resolution of Himiko returning from, I guess, Cape Canaveral at the airport, being crowded by media, and then seeing Kakeru in the distance with a bunch of flowers. And, you know, they're in love again. Wow, I totally forgot to mention something that's not actually important, but that is so out of nowhere for me that I'm not surprised that I skipped over it. Artemis is in love with Luna, and naturally, when this is brought up, everyone except Serena is like, wait, you don't know that he's in love with Luna? What's wrong with you?
I actually kind of like that.
I'm okay with that, except that it was once more the show, like, just putting me in Serena's shoes and then shit-talking me for it.
No, I don't think so. Like, I mean, I guess, yeah, but
it's like,
I didn't think this movie was too mean to Serena.
So Artemis is in love with Luna, and then, of course, he's all heartbroken because she's in love with Kakeru, and then at the end, they kind of get together and just sort of rub against each other as cats do, against humans' legs, and that's it.
Yep,
that's the movie.
That's our movie. Oh man, and of course, like, the transformation sequence for Luna is pretty cool. You know, the animation's good. She's all flowing and shit in this big dress, but like, once again, like, her fairy godmother voice does not fit this, like, new, like, young persona, too.
No, it doesn't.
Like, okay. Like, now, like, it looks like she should transform into an elderly woman, you know?
Right. But... Well, and also, like, much like I was saying the other week with Batman, the new Batman Adventures, like, it's, you know, with animation frequently, there's basically three stages of life for characters. There's, like, child, adult slash teenager, and decrepit old person.
Right.
And
it's hard to get those gradations in between.
Yeah, right. So, like, Kakeru and Himiko, I guess, are probably, like, 30 or in their 30s. I mean, Kakeru has multiple PhDs.
Like, anime always skews young, though, you know?
That's true, but regardless, I guess the context clues suggest to me that they're in their 30s somewhere. So, of course, they look exactly like the scouts. Like, who knows?
Yeah.
It's impossible to tell. And then Luna, too. Like, Luna's character, human form, could be older, but how can you tell? She looks exactly the same as Serena, who's, like, what, 14?
What is your problem with this, though? I mean, like, it's vague, but they both vaguely look the same age. It's not like, you know, at least she's not a cat anymore.
Sure. No, my problem, though, is that I'm saying, like, I think that Luna's voice would fit if the character is supposed to be older, but it's hard to tell how old the character is supposed to be.
It's just, yeah, and it's like...
Like, Luna doesn't have to be a super old woman. She could be, like, 40, but...
Yeah.
There's no way to tell because of the, you know, similar design.
And the fairy godmother voice was definitely a choice on the English dub staff side, I think.
Yeah, right.
I haven't seen too much of the original, but I'm pretty sure the original voice is not, like, an old woman, like, old wise woman. It's just kind of, like,
right.
A cat who gives Luna... Who gives, Serena shit for being lazy.
Right. And I mean, we can talk about that at a later point. I think that the fairy godmother voice fits Luna perfectly until right now.
Yeah,
like,
really.
This is the point where it starts to be really weird. But anyway, we should get to our break. When we get back, we're going to talk about our thoughts on this movie. We're going to talk about what we're going to be watching next week before we get to Zoids, finally.
Zoinks.
And then, I don't know, we're going to say goodbye, I guess.
Yep.
I'll tell you what I find very difficult to believe. Even with your extensive scientific background, you still live by these unscientific stories.
Sailor Moon S, the movie, will return in a moment.
Hey there, everybody. This is Michael, doing what I always do, giving you some information. Our opening and closing music is, as always, Vapor Diving, and the music for the bumpers is Monkeys. Both of these songs? Tracks? Music? Anyway, both of them are by Anitek, that's A-N-I-T-E-K. You can find more of their music on SoundCloud. Rights were secured through Jamendo. Our next full episode will release November 6th, and next week catch a mini-sode where we revisit Corrector Yui. As always, you can submit a topic or show suggestion for mini-sodes via DM on facebook.com/HPPod, tweet at us at Twitter at HPPod, or you can email us at hyperspacebroadcastpod@gmail.com.
A freak cold front has encircled the entire globe. Even equatorial countries such as those in Africa have received heavy snowfall.
It has to be caused by that snow witch.
There will be freezing rain and snow overnight.
And now, back to Sailor Moon S, the movie. And we are back. Let's talk about this movie. Specifically what we thought about it. What are your thoughts, Peter?
I thought it was pretty bad. Like, I kind of enjoyed the R movie. I thought it encapsulated well enough, like, a Sailor Moon story in an hour that, you know, while it did kind of manufacture some pretty weak, like, self-doubt in characters at a random point in the movie, like, I remember just, like, at one point Sailor Moon just being like, oh, suddenly I just don't think I can do it, and then everyone has to cheer her up, like,
yeah, right
that was kind of stupid. But in this movie, like, it all hinges on this pretty unrelated love story plot between Luna and this dude. And, you know, it's a kid's movie. I know we talk about, oh, it's weird and creepy that it's a cat and a dude. And it's a little weird, but, you know, it's not perverted. We're not weird. Like, of course.
Yeah,
it's,
okay.
It's innocent enough. It's fine. It's just, like, just kind of dumb and not very entertaining to watch, especially that it's so seemingly unrelated to the main plot. Like,
yeah, that's the real problem. He happens to have a
crystal. The crystal that he has seems not important at all to the main villain, really, even though it's like the thing she was searching for.
Yeah, it's her MacGuffin, but, you know, I feel like one of the problems with this movie personally is just that, and I don't know, maybe this is on me, but I feel like there are a number of things that just feel very disconnected, and yeah. Only really there's like one inflection point where it's like, oh, that's the crystal. Okay, I guess.
And it's ridiculous.
What? I don't know.
Because it's like, you have this point where they only come together in the end, like the two plots only really come together at the very end, and it's only when Sailor Moon just as a fucking side thought is like, I'm going to wish to make Luna human for a night. Okay, cool.
Like, right.
They really should have, you know, armchair fucking anime director here, but I really think they should have, like, they should sort of tied it in more. Like, have, like, Luna do something with the crystal that involves a wish granting or something. Like, have the guy be more central in, like, have the guy be more threatened and become, like, more central to the villain's plot.
Yeah, like, make him, like, a daimon or whatever. Like, that would be
kind of
cool.
Yeah, yeah, just have what if his he became, life, like, a henchman. Have his life hanging in the balance in a way that matters to the villain.
I mean, it is.
Whereas, but it's just, like, it's hanging the balance, but it's just so off to the side. It's just a random person who's cold. It's like, who gives a shit? Like, he'll be fine when we fucking beat the bad guy. We don't need to kiss him and save him. Ugh, God, right. It's just like, yeah, it's too disjointed. Just like way too like separate. And it makes it so that I really don't give a shit about the other plot. And then it makes it also so that the villains just seem completely unmotivated. It's just like, I'm evil and I want to freeze the planet. All right.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah.
That's all you got.
Yeah, Kage is pretty nothing.
Yeah, and it's frustrating. And not to mention the fucking snow dancers, because we need screeching at all times in a movie. Plus, this movie is 60 minutes long, and there are about 9 transformation sequences in full, like, in order. Like, do you really need to pad it out? I guess people want to see the glorious stock footage that is still stock footage.
Right, that we've seen a million times. And it's, like,
and like these movies, they don't even do anything extra for animation, really. Like, there's like slightly more animation in the fights, like a tiny bit of choreography instead of just having like characters blasting and then like showing them slowly dodging out of the way in like a pretty cheap looking shot. Now it's like, okay, maybe they'll actually jump out of the way of an attack.
Yeah, now there's animation for, like, fights, actually.
But it still seems, like, so bare minimum to me. It's not like, oh, this is a movie budget. It's like, oh, this is a slightly good episode budget.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I think that, I mean, I have a number of problems with this. I do think that I'm a little softer on it than I was on R, just knowing that the actual creator of the show was involved. Which, you know, does that actually improve the quality? Not really. But I also really didn't like the Sailor Moon R movie, like, not nearly as much as you did. Mm-hmm. So I feel like this is more on the level with it. And I generally agree with your points, though, like, regardless of having maybe a slightly softer spot for this movie than you, like, because the two plot lines feel almost completely disconnected. Frankly, I think that this movie would work so much better if it were not Luna, but instead, like, Jupiter. I don't know. Like,
yeah,
even that wouldn't be that much better because it would still be totally disconnected. But, like, this is a movie about a cat learning about love, basically. like that is actually kind of stated in it to be what that plot line is about, which doesn't make a lot of sense. And I could be just, you know, including outside knowledge of the show, but my understanding is that at some point Luna and Artemis have human forms anyway.
Yeah.
So like, were they always cats? Are they just taking the form of cats now? I mean, I guess it's been a while since I've actually seen the original show where they lay all this crap out. So,
and it's weird too, you know, getting a hint at like how distant the original creator was from the show too. Because I know they're quite different, the manga and the show, but. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't think that necessarily indicates that the creator was distant from the show. I think that that's just adaptation things. I mean, maybe not, but that's not necessarily an indication that, like, I mean, just as the obvious example floated in my head, the Akira manga and the Akira movie are very different, but they're made by the same guy, so that doesn't necessarily mean that it's, like, a superior or inferior version.
Yeah, right.
I don't know. I suppose overall my thoughts on this are that I was more confused by it than outright disliking it, which isn't, you know, that's certainly damning with faint praise. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't hate this. I was just perplexed by it. And I feel like maybe there's something more there in the manga. I don't know, maybe not, probably not, who knows.
Yeah,
but
I don't know, are we missing something from this? You know,
well, right, and that's the thing that's always like a little irritating about watching stuff like this, is that's how I came out of it feeling.
Yeah.
I was like, I feel like I'm missing something, and I hate feeling like that, because you know, as I've said many times before, I'd like to think that I'm a relatively attentive viewer.
Yeah, right.
even when I'm kind of like making fun of something while watching it. So being left completely confused by a thing is, I always feel like it's a failure on my part rather than the thing itself, which is probably giving too much credit to the source material, like to an extent.
I mean, Sailor Moon hasn't necessarily wowed us with plot twists and intrigue and shit, but
sure. But you know, this was just confusing. Yeah. Yeah. And there's part of me that wants to give it the benefit of the doubt of like, maybe it's me. But you know, probably wasn't.
No, there's better Sailor Moon shit out there too. Even if you like the dub stuff, like even if you like the old dub stuff,
yeah,
like just watch the show.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, too, that Sailor Moon in general is on sort of a downhill slope for me at this point, which is also kind of frustrating, because for me, it really peaked with R, and I did not think S was particularly good.
Yeah.
And so it's like there's also a part of me that's trying to maybe give this a little more leeway, just because I'm like, well, no, I like Sailor Moon. I want this to be good.
Yeah.
I wanted to recapture the like good parts of the show rather than the parts that I don't really like, which is more what I felt like this was, as we led off with. It's like, hey, do you like jokes about how Serena sucks? Well, those are the jokes in this, and screeching characters and weird romantic subplots that make almost no sense.
I'm not gonna talk down on jokes about how Serena sucks. I think that's a pretty ample and fun area. It's just when they go a little over the top with it, where they're all shitting on her all the time, which happens sometimes in the show. That's when it gets a little like, okay, come on.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose more like Serena arguing with Rey and it just going to a point where I'm like, oh my god, I feel like I'm actually watching teenagers argue,
right,
and I just don't have the patience for this. Like,
yeah.
Like, good work. They feel like teenagers, but also just both of you shut the fuck up. Like,
oh god, where do we go from here, Doug?
Well, I don't know, man. I feel like I'm rethinking my whole life right now. Well, I think what we're going to watch next is something that is probably the best outside magical girl thing that we've watched that we've only watched part of.
Are you forgetting we watched Madoka and you call it a masterpiece?
No.
It's really good.
I am not forgetting that. I do think Madoka is a masterpiece, but also we watched all of it. Unlike Corrector Yui, which is what we're going to be watching next week.
The inscrutable show... dub of Corrector Yui, which was not completed and is one of the wilder dubs out there.
It is. Also, the show is just bizarre as can be at this point. But yes, there were 18 episodes dubbed total. Last time we watched 8 episodes, so we're just going to watch the other 10 because... we both really enjoyed that show. It's a weird show about a magical girl who saves the internet. So it's kind of like reboot the Guardian Code / Sailor Moon. But funnier.
Yeah.
And not always in a bad
way. And speculative about the internet in the dumbest possible ways you could in the 90s.
Like, yeah, of course. Yeah, of
so
course.
Ridiculous.
Speculative about the internet in the 90s where everyone uses mini floppy disks.
Yeah. The ComNet, dude.
Oh boy. Yeah, it's a fun show. So that's what we're going to be doing. We're going to be finishing the dub of Corrector Yui next week. After that, we are finally getting to Zoid's Chaotic Century. We literally watched episodes of that a month before we needed
to. Yeah, yeah. I was a little excited.
You know what? I'm
pretty funny.
It's a fun show. So, yeah, we'll be getting to that stuff. But until then, I'm Michael Doak.
And I'm Peter Eby.
And be sure to revisit us next week to see the rest of Corrector Yui, or hear us talk about it. Thank you so much for listening. If you want more of our content, follow us over at facebook.com/HBpod and Twitter at HBpod, where we post all of our episodes, as well as usually some video clips related to what we've been talking about. This is also a great way to get in contact with us if you're so inclined. Subscribing via Apple Podcasts is also a surefire way to stay up to date, and while there, consider leaving us a review. We would really appreciate it. See you next week for Corrector Yui.